benvenuti al podcast di Antonino Saggio.
I'd like to welcome you all to the College of Art and Design Paula Manship Lecture Series. We're eternally grateful for Paula Manship's care and concern and funding that allows us to do this lecture series every year. Our speaker today is Dr. Antonino Saggio. He comes to us from the Ludovico Quaroni School of Architecture at the University of La Sapienza in Rome. And he's had a very diverse career, from a practicing architect to research scholar and theoretician. He's written books on Tarani and Gehry and Meyer, as well as Eisenman, and a current series on the IT revolution in architecture. Actually, I think it's up to 25 titles. And so I think all of these things, though, you can tie together, particularly in the latest research or I'm not even sure what the title would be, but with the NITRO office. And NITRO is an acronym for New Information Technology Research Office that Dr. Saggio was really the founder of. And it's a collection of scholars, academics, professionals looking at how this information age crosses many boundaries, from design and culture to the way we live and our aspirations for the future. And so I think, you know, quite rightly, you can see him studying someone like Tarani all the way up to founding this office as an interest in seeing how current culture shapes what we do and vice versa. But I will let him talk about that, so will you help me in welcoming Dr. Antonino Saggio?
Thank you, Professor Franco. It's really a big pleasure for me to be here in Louisiana after 23 years of my lifetime here. At the time, I was a little older than the majority of the students here, and I had the luck to be able to build a little pavilion inside the convention center in New Orleans 23 years ago. So it's a real pleasure for me to be here. It's my habit to have the lecture that I'm giving directly on the web. This is very important for me because everybody can go just after the lecture to see again the materials, the links, and read what has been proposed to you. So basically, the lecture is just the beginning of a kind of relationship, intellectual relationship, because all the material is already there, you can access to it. So you just go in my website, you Google my name, and then you jump into this one, you will find this website immediately. I decided during my trip in the States to have this Venice picture for me, and probably people were waiting to have something Italian. Anyway, to go to the lecture, you have to go to an hidden link, okay? From the home page, you have to find the hidden link, because I don't think it's nice to have it public before it is given. So it is here, just by actually this exhibition in New York is pretty interesting, but that's another story, alright? So you click here, and here we are. So we can do the lecture directly out of the web, or for the sake of speed and other things, we can do it locally. But we can do it right out of the web. I think we have enough energy and speed. So we have more or less 1 hour and 15 minutes. I have my timing going from this moment, so you can rely on me, okay? But probably we can try to do it a little less. I want to build, together with you, a little piece of your way of looking at the world. So, I really hope that when this conference is over, you will have a little bit different looking about our world And since we are all designers and architects, for us the way to understand the world is also a way to design it. The two things are interrelated. The issue that I want to build is that really a very interesting and powerful way to conceive faith, that in some ways one of the great interests of architects, is really information. So that really I want to build a point that space is information. And I think that this idea will be like a seed in your mind, in your brain, that can develop in many different possibilities and experiences depending on the level in which you are in. Okay? If you are the first year students, probably you need to face many other issues, but increasingly in your career and research and adventures in architecture, you will kind of face this issue and start to design and act to it. In order to build that point, we have to really do an intellectual promenade in a way. So in this 1 hour and 15 minutes, we have to go in different, we have to find different intellectual landscapes in some way. We go from one situation to another situation, because in order to really build that point, we have to do a little trip, a little walk. And so this is kind of the cycle of issues that we are going to face. Some are, in some way, the beginning ones are really pretty simple, I think, a kind of introductory of the theme. So we are discussing about the industrial cities. What is the difference between the idea of the industrial city and the information cities in which we are in? We are then facing the issues of the changing notion of time, of today experience. Then we start to tackle the center of our problem, the changing notion of space. And then we have to understand a series of issues like the processes, the looking inside, and time to define space, that are all issues interrelated one to the other to really move to the central part of the conversation, that is, what is space, and then finally space as information, that is the real center. And then we move down and we show some examples. So this is what we are going to do in this hour and a half. So let's start with something quite simple. We have really to understand, I think, that we are in a different era of humanity, and we know that. It's been at least 25, 30 years. In 1980, the book of Alvin Toffler was out. It was called The Third Wave. And the third wave means that we are in a phase of the history of humanity in which information is really the value, is really the element that creates value, and all society relates with information, like in the past societies were related with industrial power and industrial machinery, and previous ones were related to the land and agriculture. So the information age, we are definitely in the information age. Everything rotates around information. Information is the added value. That's it that makes things happening in today's society. So first of all, it's a very, very important social and economical and powerful element of today. We can start to understand how that issue, the fact that we are in a third wave, in a real era of humanity that rotates around information, everything really changes. And for example, the idea of the city is completely changing from the previous industrial city to the contemporary city. Just pointed out very simply certain issues. The whole idea of the industrial city was based on zoning. Basically, the idea of the city was planned in some way as a factory with different productive cycles. And the same thing was happening in the city. Certain parts of the city were for residential, certain other parts were for production, some other parts were for service, etc. And everything was related to a kind of cycle. linear puzzle. Today, we tend to be more and more in a paradigm in which activity tend to be one together with the other, tend to lead one to the, to, with the other. I think the key idea to understand that in some way, if the key object, the symbol of the industrial phase was the car, and the car, the famous 4T, was the car that allowed the kind of movement, right, from one part to the other of the city, today we have no doubt that the symbol object is the computer, and particularly the personal computer. And whoever is using it knows exactly what happens in a personal computer, that more than one activity happens simultaneously. You can play and you can work, you can have your business correspondence, and you can organize pictures, basically all simultaneously. That's a real idea, that everything may happen simultaneously and overlap one with the other, is really an idea that from the object, the personal computer, moves to ideas in design and the way that actually cities are made more and more. For example, the concept of a key concept of today, it is clearly the idea of mixité. In basically all Western cities, more and more, we have buildings that don't follow only one function, but follow a combination of functions that tend to work simultaneously. So these are all phenomena. We are tackling just the surface. We are just at the beginning of this trip. We start to understand that information is not only has an economical value, not only is the power that moves all our society, but has impact in our building environment. If you look at this picture, you understand quite well certain ideas. The idea of the modernist architect of the 20s and 30s, this is a very famous Le Corbusier plan, was really to organize the city as a factory itself, with different cycles and different parts, and literally, almost literally, as a piece of machinery. So the idea of the chain, of the productive chain, was absolutely built in the old society, the industrial mechanism, and the way to design, and the way to make urban planning. We know that today the issue becomes that one of the interconnection in, or the presence of more function. So from the idea of the chain, on the linear chain, we are in the at least of net, or interconnected parts. And of course, all this moves with actual design of architecture. One of the typical modernist ideas is to have architecture as a perfect object, as a perfect piece of machinery, put it on the land in a way that was kind of sitting there. The absolute perfection of this piece of machinery became architecture, was part of that idea of the world. While today we are moving more and more in the in-between spaces, we create architecture that is not an object but is a series of relationships, a series of liaison, or what is around it, like a sound that reverberates from the context to architecture, from the architecture to the context, is really a completely different attitude of making architecture. And one of the other big differences between industrial city and the information city we are in is really the presence of the nature in our cities. These are two perspectives of the 20s that really show very well that idea of the city as a large factory. The rationale, the sequence, kind of each part has its perfect logic was really clearly depicted here. But one interesting aspect, it is also interesting in these two drawings by Hilbert Simer, famous architect of the 20s, that there is not a single piece of trees or grass or greenery. It's all a completely artifact environment. One of the great aspects of today, in terms of rethinking many of these processes, is that the information city, for a series of reasons, can bring nature back into the city. In some way, nature, and nature with nature I mean environment, environment consciously, sustainability, and so on and so forth, can find place again in our city. For years I was talking about these issues that is pretty evident, just last year I found the perfect example of this, that I think it is this case that is in Seoul, in Korea. What happened in this case particularly, the downtown of the city was actually built and surrounded by highways, more or less similar to this one. And what the mayor, the municipality did, they took out one of these highways existing for more or less 2 or 3 miles, so very long, and put back the river into it. So this really shows the fact that this other phase of history of humanity and this other phase of understanding of the city reconquer nature, reconquer the city. So this is a very interesting example. This is a kind of an extreme case. This is a scholar, an artist, and scientist that is working for a kind of hybrid architecture that is half vegetable and half architecture, and basically what he does is studying processes that structure can be built in the water, and in some cases this structure can be even be eatable. So it's kind of an extreme process in that search of an hybridization between certain issues concerning new generation of architecture. Just this to show a few of example of that. So this to tell that information can be really, it is really one of the driving force of today's city, and we can see this in many different way and example and situations. I think one that can be quite interesting, if it works, okay. We can see this little movie. This is something in Korea that I think it is very interesting as a building, okay. What is this building? It's a building designed by an office that is called RAD, but is clearly inspired by the thinking of Rand Koolhaas that collaborated in different ways with this group of architects. What this one is basically is a new generation skyscraper in Seoul. And if you look like this, you think, okay, it's pretty interesting. It's has a series of interesting shape. There are these elements in front on the street. Goes a little bit down in the basement. There are a series of attractive elements of this that clearly talk about the contemporary world and society in which we are in. Then we are enter the lobby area, and in the lobby area we see again a large presence of greenery, and here we see something that relates to information technology, similar things that we've seen around now for years, like in Prada offices and things like that, interactive situations. And we can get out and look it again. And so that's it's about it. And then you say, okay, why is not just showing us this? There are many things like that. Now, here, we see the building in the night, and although it's not completely clear what's going on, I think in a second we're going to understand what is the real key of what's going on here. Okay. We see that the lights are changing in the building, and these lights are changing following a cycle that is not predetermined. It is a cycle in some way that it depends on factors that are related to the outside. So, if we go back and see the whole thing again, we start to understand how certain issues of information technology really are arriving in making actual buildings at the level of a skyscraper. And those are true, they became true. So first of all, for example, let's see the shape of the building again. The shape of the building is that type of, is not strictly orthogonal shape, the kind of one-note shape that we like, which is okay. And then we have these schemes that in some way they are moving one with the other that creates that kind of digital effect in the facade. Again, you can think that that is pretty cute. Then, these elements here on the street that we can imagine they are interesting elements like of our urban making of the street or transition are instead something extremely interesting because they contain speaker and the speaker can be interactive related to us in an interactive way. This is a building of the major company of telephone in Seoul. And basically here, it is possible, it is already done, but can be done very easily, that when I go there through my SIM, they recognize me and they say, "Hello, Antonino, what brings you in Seoul today?" So it's basically, it happens a one-to-one relationship. Or we, these kind of elements can provide me extra information that I may want or not want. For example, if by any chance there are some friends of mine around Seoul or things like that. So these elements are not only elements of design, but are elements of interactive playing of information between the street, the building, and myself. And everything starts to be subjective, tend to be me as an individual that are related to that. If we are inside the atrium, the atrium of the building, we see that there is a big presence of electronics. And this presence of electronics, it is done because the whole atrium is basically set up in such a way that electronic artists can have their show there, basically providing already the basic infrastructure. But the most interesting thing of all, it is, as I said, is the scheme. Now, the scheme is not done in that way only for formal reason, although they were very nice, but it's also because the lighting effects in the night are basically taking place in these elements. So these elements are not only something that gives a little chiaroscuro and tension to the form, which is already very nice and very pleasant, but it's also the way that during the night the play of the interactive lights in the building are basically captured in the building, actually emanates from the building, because they are not projection, it's the building that emanates that. So, why I'm doing all this? Because I'm telling you that information now, things that we've been theorizing the last years, now they start to really happen and have a real impact in the city and at the scale of a skyscraper, so not at the scale of a little building. Okay, we've been doing these things for years, And I'm very glad to be here because Professor Marcella De Signore, that was one of your teachers and was graduated with me and helped me, inviting me, etc., was part of a lot of this search and adventure that we've been doing in the last what's the matter here? I'd like to see that. I'll move locally. Just a second. Okay, this, for example, was one project done many years ago. What was the sound? It's not coming. It's not coming sound.
Can you just turn it up?
Let's hear that sound. No, it's okay. For some reason, well, it doesn't matter. Is that a big deal? Okay, yes. Okay. So, for example, for years and years, we've been designing and studying different hypotheses of this way that information can interact with the building. This is a work of one of the main students of mine done many years ago, right, a couple of years ago, and that really shows that an industrial building, a gasometer in this case, can be transformed as a way to relate information, send information to the city. And do this is a kind of a complex, it is a complex job, and all the work of the students are done during the years in a lot of detail. So these are not just pictures, but there is a lot of study in the background, in the way to do it, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Okay, now let's see. For example, we can see some of these studies of really what was possible to do in terms of transformation of the information of the building, how to react it with the city, etc. I wanted to show this to give you the sense that there is a research on this theme that goes in many different relationships and involves the students as well. Okay. Now let's move a little bit more in our walk. We basically just done the first part. We just have a sense of why the city that we left at our shoulder, the industrial city, is something profoundly different than the city in which we are in, and then information is one of the key ingredients of that. We didn't have more than 5 or 10 minutes to discuss these issues, but just to put you in the atmosphere. Now we move in the second topic, the changing notion of time. Now, we left an era in which time was clearly defined the symbol of the time was the clock. It was the kind of circular movement of the clock. And the clock was defining different phase of the day, and at the same time was defining different activities, and at the same time was creating different spaces in the city and different functions. Today we are in a digitalized time. The idea of the time is not that kind of continuous order cycle, but again it is something that becomes digitalized and lives in a much more different way, definitely a much more different way. We can ask, for example, one simple question. At the time of the industrial cities, we can ask, where was the clock? We surely have an image that the clock was localized, and was localized in the factory, in the school, in the tower of the university. And that time, that kind of controlled time in the circle, was governing and projecting its structure in our activities, in our life, in our time, in our way of building and thinking about the city. If we think today, we ask today, where is the clock? You will immediately understand that the clock is everywhere. It is in our telephone, it is in our computer, it is in the microwave, in the fridge, it is everywhere. So that difference from the localization of the idea of the time, and also power that projecting that idea of the time, to this kind of digitalization, diffusion, I think is a very interesting idea, because it brings to many others as a consequence. One of the most important ones is really the idea of continuous negotiation about several conditions concerning our time. This idea of the continuous negotiation of time, I think, is very interesting. I was thinking, I think it's the first time that I'm trying to describe this in public, but I think it's a nice example is if we think of two persons that want to meet one to each other in the different moments of the time. If we think of the ancient medieval time, Beatrice and Dante Alighieri would have said, okay, we see a dusk just outside the door of the city. So in a kind of vague kind of situation. In industrial time, Beatrice and Dante would say, well, we see each other at Fifth Avenue and Broadway at 6 p.m., all right? But if they have to meet each other in contemporary time, very probably they will constantly call each other with the telephone and until find a continuous negotiation of time and space until they found each other. So that's the real idea that even the time and space become flexible because of our tool, in this case our tool really, it is an interesting one. We are living in a constant phase of negotiation with time. Time, from the vague and mystical presence of the medieval time, and to the very precise and objective connotation of the industrial time, move to a kind of continuous negotiation. And all of you have experienced that. So time is definitely something different from that one that we used to. Now we are approaching another important step. Number three, we have 10. The number three is the changing notion of space, and we start to be closer to our actual subject. Now you see, we are generally built, particularly our generation, but still a little bit yours, on a wrong idea that the space is something that stays out there, and in some way architects design artifacts that sit in that space that is out there. It's not true. Things are not exactly like that. Things are, more closely to an interesting point, that our mental notion of space, the mental notion of space that we learn and then we practice, and then we study in different epochs of humanity, in some way are projected in the way that we understand space and in the way that we design space. And there is a very strong relationship between the two, between our notion and understanding of space and the type of architecture that we are going to make it. In order to make that mental idea of the space a real thing, to reify that mental idea. There is no better example to express that than the advent of perspective in the 15th century. Because you see, perspective, for the first time, created a relationship, a kind of mathematical relationship between a way to measure space and the human being. Space was not anymore a kind of mystical mystery that you can only relate to it with the idea of spirituality of God, but it's something that you can control in some way. You can measure particularly. And that invention, because what an invention, created a different architecture. In order to fulfill that idea that space became something that you can measure and you can control and you can really be part of in a kind of series of relationship with you in the space, really called for one of the biggest revolutions in architecture that ever happened. That was really the arrival of the Renaissance architecture. Renaissance architecture cannot be conceived without perspective. Actually, Renaissance architecture is the result of perspective in some way. It's the way that the way that architecture has to change in order to fulfill a series of perspectival rules. And because the architecture wants to be read in perspective. Of course, you know, we can do we can do what type of things we want, and they are depicted in perspective, that's for sure, but they are not done to express perspective. They are not done to capture the essence of perspective. And all the effort that was done by Brunelleschi, Alberti, and the others, but Brunelleschi at first, and the painters too, was exactly that one, to build a type of painting and to build a type of architecture that was able to express and incorporate perspective. That's why modularity, that's why perspective, that's why return to a kind of controlled system that was the classical system that was easy to use to reinforce the idea of perspective. So, space, the idea of space, the mental idea of the space, the constructive and scientific idea of space, and architecture really, really are part of the same world, a world that is combined together, and they are not separated. Now we have to build another concept, the number four. That is the issues of the prothesis that we may also call instruments if we want. Now, human beings have this kind of peculiar capabilities to create tools and to create instruments. There are two different words and can be used in different contexts to extend the capabilities of our bodies. Basically, the tool, util in French, is used as a physical extension of the body, like a hammer. But the instrument is more important. The instrument is really, a very nice definition is by Alexandre Coiret, that is a French epistemologist, and he said that the instrument is materialization of the spirit. Which is a pretty nice definition. Why the instrument is materialization of the spirit? And why the instrument for excellence is the telescope? The telescope, for the first time in the history of the humanity, put things upside down. Before, the world was something that you can only look at it and wait for the power of God or the power of whatever mystical thing was up there to arrive to you. Everything was from top down, from God and power and religion down. But the first time the telescope looks from the bottom up, and the man tries to understand the rules, the scientific objective rules of the universe. You know that revolution is one of the strongest revolutions in the thinking and in the advance of science. And Galilei not only created the instrument, but created all the math, all the philosophy that was related to that kind of movement. You know, finally the man sits with his foot on the ground and look with his tools, with his instrument at the world. So the instrument is really the materialization of that spirit, of that new spirit. So that thing is not only something that happened into the science. More or less at the same time it happened in architecture. For the first time, and Borromini is the person to do that, architecture also was conceived as a series of forces that was coming from ground up and not from top down. Really as a series of dynamic forces that was moving from ground to conquer the sky, and not vice versa. You see it very clearly in this section of San Carlino. Of course, we can do only a lecture only on this on Borromini. This is only a little nuance of a much more complex discussion that we are making. And again, Caravaggio is the same thing in the same moment. So Caravaggio, Galileo, and Borromini are three persons that more or less in the same time put the world upside down. Really started to move from the bottom up. From the bottom up, and this is so strong in the painting as well as in the architecture and of course in the telescope. So why I'm making this? I'm making this to tell you one other key element in our menu here. That is, we human beings are not confined in our limits, in our physical limits or in our mental limits. We constantly build mental theories and scientific theories to extend those potentialities, and at the same time we have the ability to build instruments, and the instruments have that incredible possibility to show us something that is completely inconceivable without the instruments. We can see the past, because with the telescope we see physically the past, right? We can have information about stars or about elements of our universe that are not there anymore, for example, or many other things, many, many other things. So instruments are something that really expand our capabilities. And this is pretty amazing, because we are architects and we have all to deal with these issues. Are not part that only interest scientists or magicians or artists. They do interest architects. They do always interest architects. From Borromini, Brunelleschi, whatever time, because the architect is engaged on an intellectual discourse, on a physical discourse. Now, since we have instruments, a very interesting thing is to look inside it. That means to try to understand what the presence of that instrument calls, or what kind of challenge it gives to us and poses to us. The instrument is not just a neutral thing that is just there and appears there. It creates or can create important change in the vision, in the making, and everything. I have a long passion for Borromini and Caravaggio, as you can guess. And for example, I wrote something about the use of the mirror and of the camera oscura on Caravaggio, just to explain why those instruments really called for a revolution in his vision. And are not just only technical as, are really elements that urge a different aesthetic. So, in order to do that, we have to look inside. We have to question the tool and question the instrument and look and create a dialogue between each nature and our work and our goal and what that instrument poses us as new questions and new crises. That's why one of the images that I always love very much and I use often is this image on the left that shows Steve Jobs, more or less at your age, when he was in a computer fair showing the Apple I in 1976. And what is nice for me for that image is that he has a chip in his hand and he looks at the chip. Okay, looks at the chip. So for me, that is really symbolic. It's a very symbolic image. And the fact that you have to look inside means that you have to really try to engage a dialogue with our instruments, because that instrument can really are materialization of the spirit, so they are not toys, but are very important artifacts that can really change the way that we understand and then design architecture. Now, we are kind of approaching the difficult part. Okay, so far was reasonably simple. The difficult part is, in some way, start to understand the two different entities, time and space, they are not really different. In some way, they are interrelated. And one way to really have a good understanding of space is exactly through time. So time is a real good way to understand space. In order to do that, we can do a series of thinking that in another lecture we can do it quite fast. Let's just try to build this experiment. Just to show you a little bit this idea. Try to imagine to be confined in an only two-dimension world. Try to imagine that all your life it is only on a lives only on a sheet of paper. Okay? You are a being like a worm or a caterpillar that only can experience the world in two dimensions. Of course, that is a world, has its own rule, and in order to experience that world in some way, time will be the crucial element, because basically, the only way to understand in the edges, you don't see the edges, because you are confined only in a two-dimensional world. The only way to do that is understanding the time difference that goes from one edge to the other edge. You have no other way. Of course, I'm using something that is quite known as a way of approaching this type of problem, that is flatness by the famous author of the last century. It's a novel that called Flatland, many of you know. Okay, so now, so the only way to understand the world in a two-dimensional environment is really through time. Vision will not help. Now, try to imagine this, okay, that you are in this two-dimensional surface and you are traveling from this point to this point. Now, this world is kind of gradually moving and doing like that. Basically, from your point of view, since the only way to experience this world is two-dimensional, for you nothing really changed. You basically take the same amount of time to go from this point, if this is flat or if this is curved, right? But now, for 1 second, just look at this situation from the outside, from a world that from two dimensions became a three-dimensional world, you immediately understand that the simplest way to go from point A to point B is not in this way, but with a vector that moves in this direction. So, what does that mean? That means a very important thing. Means two things simultaneously. First, that is true that in as far as you are in two dimensions, space, is, time is the only way that you can really understand something of the space. And the second very important thing, it is that when you jump outside of one world, in this case you jump from the two dimensions to three dimensions, completely new things happen. And particularly the fact that it's very simple looking from the a three-dimensional world, that from this point to this point there is a vector that goes in this direction that makes the connection much easier than the other one. I'm doing in 3 minutes something that needed at least 1 hour to be discussed properly. So excuse me for that, but I have to do it within a more complex structure. So rely on me a little bit. Really, time is a very good way to define space. And what I'm really interested in here is the concept of jump. The concept of jump is very important because it's exactly that thing that from the two-dimensional constrained world in which certain rules apply, when you change sistema di riferimento, this is a concept of physics, and look at this from a third dimension, three dimensions, so you make a jump outside the system, new rules apply. This idea that more dimensions, different rules apply, is one of the very, very important concepts that we can use in many situations of our interest that, as you can imagine, relate with information technology. Now, space as information. Let's arrive to the point that I want to build. And so up to this point, let's see this movie. Okay, we're going to see this more than once. So, this is an installation at the Venice Biennale done by Marcos Novak, that is one of the architects of the group of the information technology pioneer in some way. What is this? It is an installation that tells the point that you are interested in. First question. Space exists or don't exist. Space is always related to physical and visual information, or it can be related to other information as well. So, is there such a thing as an invisible space? If you think of these questions in abstract, well, since we are kind of educated very physically and very visually, all those questions will make no sense, basically. Instead, this installation shows they do have sense. So, it's possible to have a concept of an invisible space. And what it is actually simple. A definition, a portion of the space is controlled by sensors. So, looks exactly the same, but actually tells a completely different story. As soon as we enter with our, in this case, hands or body in that portion of the space, many different things may happen, and here we can see some. One, for example, is that, of course, we can kind of frame the space, because our movements of our hands are recorded, and the information of that movement is sent to a computer that algorithmically changes those movements in a musical composition. That depends if the algorithm is sophisticated enough, is well done enough, the type of music. Same thing, of course, it may happen with space. When you see here, you see something that is projecting there on the screen. It is clear that what is in the screen is exactly the recording of that movement that from one side becomes music, from the other side becomes projection, real-time projection of the transformation of the movement. And clearly, the third element that you see here, this hanging model, are not anything else than the frozen frame of that movement. One of those configurations, it is kind of glazed and became the model. So anyway, this gives really this idea that space, in that way, you start to build the idea that space, invisible space, must exist, and that if that space, it is something that we may define information. And it's something that we can start to manipulate with our new processes. And information technology can play a very important role on that. But let's build this point a little more clearly. I think what is very interesting to understand is to try to answer to this question. Does color really exist? And we can change that very easily. In that space really exists. But let's try to answer to the question, does color really exist? And, looking at this problem from a very, very different point of view, we are discovering a very interesting thing. First of all, that the color is not absolute at all. The perception of the color is not absolute. The perception of the color is extremely contextual. It depends in the context. There are experiments that just show that everybody that looks at this cross knows that there is an overlapping of this color with this color that creates that. So that issue is pretty clear. But in the moment that we just separate those four, those squares, so they break that contextual rule, we immediately read this image completely different. So this brings the idea that the reading of the color, it is absolutely contextual. Not only the color is contextual, but the real idea of transparency is contextual as well. And transparency is one of the great thinking of architecture, both of the architecture of the industrial time and architecture of today, in very different ways, in very, very different ways, because while for the modern movement the idea of transparency was the revelation of the objectiveness of the world, for today transparency belongs to a world of skin, of illusionism, of continually changing effects, or, you know, even scenographic ideas, etc., 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 belongs to a world that is completely different from the world of the objectiveness of Robbins. Second thing, Charles Wang says, if color really exists or not. First of all, we said that it's contextual, so we start to be shaking about the fact that a color is like that. It really depends. And the other thing is physiological. We know that birds have an incredible spectrum of colors. They see much, much more, much more than us. If we see, a certain amount, the projection here is not here, but comes here, if it's a little sharper. Basically, if we just see a certain extent of color, birds look much, much more, and that really becomes, on a way that the eye, it is built. Birds have four cones that allow a very large degree of color recognition. We have three, and actually as mammals we are already pretty developed, because the large majority of mammals that are night animals, basically, they have only two cones, so the large majority of mammals look only black and white, as you know. So, completely different world. The world that the birds perceive or the world that we perceive is a very, very different one concerning color. And the third is even more interesting, that is cognitive. It's really color, the perception of the color is really very much related to a cognitive fact that in itself depends on many other things. For example, if you make the question, what is the color of eyes, he can have an answer that goes around 20 possibilities, because the color of eyes for them has many different types of white, and that this very, very different type of white depends on, you know, level of humidity, fragility, whatever, because that is absolutely vital to recognize that different whiteness of the eyes for them, while for us basically as one, right? Same thing with blue, and I found a very nice poem by Paskin, this Russian poet that was describing that, that, you know, for us that lives in the Mediterranean, there is not only blue, there is many, many possible ways to describe the color of the sky. We have many, many words, because we are used to a lot of gradients of blue. But if you ask to an Englishman, either the sky is blue or it's not blue. Basically, it doesn't have all the words. And here it's done in a very, very nice way by the Russian. He told that the sky in Italy of an inexpressible blue, because coming from Russia, it didn't have even the word, you know. So that goes to the idea, brings you really to the idea that color, to the answer, color exists or color does not exist, the answer is in some way in the middle. Electronic radiation, that is matter, do exist. Color, as we use and we intend, depends on these three factors that are physical, contextual, and cognitive. And the combination of these three things brings to a very simple thing, that color is information. Color is really information. This does very important piece of information about the environment, and of course, since the information is something that is a relationship between a sender and a receiver, really depends also. You know, the type of information that we are interested is different from the type of information that a bird is interested. So, to the answer, if the color exists or color doesn't exist, is again, the color, it is basically information, and depends on those three factors. And at this point, you can understand very, very well that exactly the same set of rules apply to other elements, like, for example, sound. Even sound exists or doesn't exist. It depends on that three factors. And if we do another jump, it's again space. Does space exist or space does not exist? Again, space, matter exists. Space is a combination of cultural, cognitive, and physical ways to interact with the environment. So the components that are the cognitive component, the physical component, and the contextual component are absolutely crucial in that understanding of space. And the space that we experience, it is clearly completely different type of space that a worm experiences, or a caterpillar experiences, or other situation or animals or beings will experience. So it's really a conventional construction, it's a cultural construction. And now comes back the idea of the prophecies and the idea of the information technology and the fact that these instruments are not neutral in our understanding of a new generation of space. Since the space is not something that is just there, but is already per se information, we can manipulate that information, we can give expression to that information, we can create
a new generation of architecture because there is a new understanding of space. And that is related to the advent of all these technologies and these potentialities that are like processes that enlarge our understanding and do it in many ways. Imagine just what internet is, just to mention just one of the simplest one, but we have many, many, many others now. I ran like 1 year ago in this incredible picture for me. I was in Istanbul in a congress of astronauts. And, well, astronauts are really great guys. We kind of lost that perception from the 60s, but, you know, they're really supermen for many reasons. Because they experience space in a very different situation than ours, you know. They have their understanding of space is completely different because they are trained and experiencing all the time situation of zero gravity, of no gravity. And, you know, just the fact to look at the thing from a completely different perspective changed very much the way of looking at it. So in that congress, I found this image that I found it very fascinating because it is Santa Sofia, Hagia Sophia in Istanbul. So probably the greatest and most important monument of humanity, although it was built in the other empire. And what happened here was that there was this scaffolding that was divided exactly at the half, the great face of the dome. So there is a scaffolding on one part and that one on the other. So I imagine the scaffolding as a digitized environment, like an invisible space that can be actually manipulated and can be actually activated and can be really part of a new generation of architecture. So, in this case, it's physical, but you can imagine it virtually, but activated, can be activated in many different ways because of today. And the space can become something very different with today, understanding, culture, and technology all together. So that is the kind of challenge we have in front of us. And you know that these things are basically technically possible. Many of you remember this famous scene from a Spielberg movie when Tom Cruise was actually manipulating the space, right? Taking pieces of information on one part, recollecting on the other, really having a relationship with the space that is completely different. The idea is how all these things that are possible will move to a new understanding of how we can create space, of the type of aesthetic challenge that we have, the functional challenge, and particularly how all these things will not be needed to make the next generation house of the Arab richest men in the world, or the next generation house of Bill Gates or whoever, but really how all these issues are or must be tackled in order to address crises, problems, situations in which all this reasoning it becomes essential. And we start thinking a situation of problem, risk, and difficulties of all gender, and applying these ideas, will very suddenly start to face a new generation of ideas, a new generation of architecture. And it's what we are actually doing, trying to apply this idea to risky situations and difficult situations. So, in terms of our negotiation of time, I have 11:04 minutes. So, I think it's too long. I will do it a little shorter. So, I will not show you several of these works, although some are interesting. I can probably just show one to show you what do I mean to work for a crisis situation. For example, this is one interesting case. This is a project of graduation that has been done in Rome with one of my graduate students. In this case, the student is looking for almost 3 or 4 weeks to a difficult situation in the city. And just the fact to look for a difficult situation is a very important challenge for him and for myself at the same time. And so that first part is the most difficult one of the whole final work of the thesis. At the end was found this highway that was being in the 60s for the Olympiad in Rome, that was cutting through a large park in Rome. So this large park was cut in two. In this particular case, the idea was starting to understand what is possible to do in some way to tackle that crisis, that problem, that difficult issue. In the analysis, it's been discovered that actually Francesco Borromini, the famous Baroque architect, made several designs in this large villa. So it came out the idea that is a very interesting idea to do a museum of Borromini and Baroque architecture in this situation. Then what we start seeing here is something quite interesting, that the whole diagrammatic process that is very usual today, coming from the thinking that started by Peter Eisen and by others, in order to, relate architecture with a series of diagrams, was combined with the diagrams of Borromini himself, that in some way was using diagrams too. So he was born a kind of hybrid of the two processes. And then another idea was very important, is this idea here that comes from an interesting Italian engineer called Musmeci, that was that one to play with membrane, so create bridges or forces with using membrane. So the whole ideas combined together created the idea that the museum has to act, of course, relating to all diagrams forces, but at the same time acting as a membrane on the two parts of the villa to reconnect it. So the building acts as a bridge, at the same time as a diagram, as a piece of nature, and to be located in that part. And then, of course, there are many other things that we can discuss. Particularly, information technology here becomes very important in the idea that the building starts to react as an active element of the nature. It's not only using energy in a logical way, but also in some way purify the air, and the polluted air through different system of filter, etc. And that is particularly important because we're sitting on top of the island. So I'm describing this in like 2 minutes, but just to tell you that there is a kind of circularity, that these ideas move back and forth. At the beginning was mentioning, and I'm very glad of that, the NITRO group that I found in at the end of 2003 with a group of young assistants, basically. The group is operating since then in a series of activities. Some are design-oriented, some are teaching-oriented, because we run in Sicily a small school, a small summer school, and I hope on some occasion we can have some of the faculty here, some of the students visiting us in Sicily. And but we also do design and experiments. So I use the last 6 minutes of our negotiation to describe very quickly this project, and then we are done. Now, this project is located in a very interesting garden that is called Giardino Sonoro, Sonar Garden. In this garden, there is the combination of two personalities, one that is a landscape architect and a gardener, and the other one that is a musician, that is him, particularly expert in electronic music. What they do in the garden, basically they create installations that are hybrid between nature and sound. Sound is incorporated in natural artifacts or elements in many different ways. This is just one example, for example, that in this bushes
there are different speakers, so they are here. And that's why there is a whole technology that is a natural technology to keep the bush humid and warm with water enough and to have the speaker. But at the same time, since he's a musician, he creates music just for that situation. So the musical composition, the technology, the information technology, they belong to the same world. So this is what they do, and they do it in Florence. So from year to year, they do kind of a festival. They invite other architects to do something. And in one year, we were invited there. And what we did, it is this. This is one of the icons of the architecture of Illuministic time. Is the frontispiece of the Abello Gioia book, A Tale to La Citature, that shows basically a symbolic image that shows the real rule of architecture based in the correspondence of nature. So this kind of the primitive art really corresponding to what are the serious best rules of architecture, and she shows to the little architect what is the following, the way to go, sticking on the rules of too much practice and too much formalism. So that primitive art, in some way, was the beginning story of the modernism, in some way, or can be read as the beginning of the modernism, going back to kind of few solid rules. We've done a new art, an art of electronic time, in which all these ideas in some way are combined in a little installation that is true, that is done, and that is its own, its particular interest. What's going on? The primitive act of the electronic time became a censored space. The space is all censored, and the person that comes in the act manipulates again the space and the sound moving around the music. That is a pre-recorded registration by the musician, changes on certain aspects of the music, like the pitch or the intensity of the rhythm, but doesn't change the compositionally. That is a very important point between Bruschi and ourselves. Bruschi was the musician, because actually the musicians don't like too much to have all that interactivity, you know, they want to have the composition, so they cannot change it too much. So certain elements of the music, you know, like the pitch and the sound and the level was changing, but not the real structure. But anyway, it is very interesting and very emotional to be in that space. Because to be in that space, you really are experiencing something different. You are experiencing something very primitive, like, you know, art done by trees, basically. But at the same time, you are kind of moved and projected in another dimension, that dimension that the faith can be manipulated, and you can really start to do something different with the space, and really that space become also information. So, and there is one thing that really moves ahead certain ideas of Marcos, because the whole body participate to that experience, like the whole environment participating with the experience, that I think it is very interesting. Okay. Here there is another, okay, I think it's in YouTube, you can see it in YouTube. The other person in the group that took care particularly of this exhibition loved very much to do this kind of sociological experience, which we're going to see in a second. But basically, the installation was extremely successful, so many people used it in all kinds of different ways, position, and engagement with the installation and with the space. And here we can see that kind of recording of that very different thing. And what I was thinking today about is that social behavior. We are talking about social behavior and how social bring substances that are behavioral substances back to this information layer. I think they are, could be an interesting way of thinking. So, as you see, there are these are a series of ideas that has been presented to you today, and really they cover a path that is that has many influences and many crossing and different ideas. But if one only bridge was built, was that really the idea of that the space is not something objective, but is something that we can manipulate, and we manipulate with the level of our knowledge, scientific knowledge, and also with the help, the substantial help of our instruments, and the combination of the two can generate new experiments in architecture and a new understanding of architecture. I think that the goal of this lecture was fulfilled. Thank you.
You were talking about how from the Renaissance perspective, painting the, I guess, way to describe their space.
Yeah.
And you talked about how now that we have the information technology movement, that the interactivity is kind of the component that starts to define what architecture
and space is coming to them. Yeah. Is that, like, I guess, is that the only thing that you see the computer revolution or revolution doing in architecture, or is that just kind of where you're pushed?
No.
Basically, the whole idea is that the information technology revolution has impact in all aspects. Economic aspects, sociological aspects, urban aspects, etc., etc. And evidently, it has very, very important impact in the production of architecture. Incredible aspect in the production of architecture, both in terms of
type of interconnection that is possible to have, the idea of negotiation that becomes much more important between clients, consultants, and all that, and many other aspects, production, you know. All that is extremely important. But, there is a but. The real jump happens when all these things arise also to an aesthetic level. And by aesthetic I mean a superior level of knowledge in some way that is synthetic. That means that all of those things become real, making a jump themselves. To make an example, in terms of, if you study the beginning of modern architecture, you see that reinforced concrete, glass, hygiene, other principles, they've been using, you know, for years, for decades. But it was the one moment in which all those ideas were kind of being captured together and made the real jump of the real profound understanding that new architecture was born. It was not only born because it was reinforced concrete, glass, etc., but also because a new aesthetic came all of those things together. And now the new aesthetic of the modernism was clearly around the issue of transparency. That was a clear catalyst of all these ideas together. So the new aesthetic of the modernism cannot be understood without that. So when I describe in my writing, because he is mentioned in writing, I never even mentioned the word interactivity during this lecture, so I'm pretty sure, I think that you read something, because otherwise that question would not relate immediately to the lecture. So when in the writing I talk a lot about interactivity, what I mean is that interactivity, around the concept of interactivity, probably there is the new aesthetic of the information technology. And so it's something similar as a catalyst of what transparency was. So it's not because it's the all important thing, but it's the element, there are many more, in some way there are many other things that are important, but that is the key ingredient probably to really have the complete consciousness of a new phase of architecture. Architecture that really found its way in all these new tool, instrument, potentiality, but it's also able to create a new aesthetic in some way. That's it. Thank you for the question. Yes.
So I think one of the things that gets interested is the possibility of the scenarios, and in particular when scenarios are combined in space and time and create one configuration. Mm. So in that context, how do you see the role of the designer?
Well, you see, one of the very important metaphors of looking the role, let's say, the role of the designer today, particularly if you're dealing with this keyword, is the word game and the word play. Because the more you deal with this type of processes, of dynamic processes, the more you understand that probably, to a certain extent, the role of the designer is the person that set up a series of rules within which certain scenarios or certain formal architecture, etc., takes place. So the idea of overlapping, of certain way of thinking of game as a system of creation of rules and certain degree of changing behavior within those rules, and a new idea of architecture related to this process is a very information technology. One powerful idea is really close to the idea of game design, etc., in which the designer is not so much that person that makes a specific play, but makes the rule of many possible games that happen within that. And I participated to two interesting experiences about this. One that Carlos Ruiz in there made two conferences that are called Game Set Play. The first was kind of the beginning, the second one was very important, make a big book about it. And many occasions we discussed about this issue. So really looking at the role of the designer in this new way, thinking of certain ideas of that. And I think it is very interesting to have an overlapping of the two. And then, for example, all that world of the virtual game and the virtual world, that, you know, for some is a real kind of mania, no? He has an overlapping with those ideas of behavior, of scenarios, of, you know, and I think it's a very interesting area of overlapping of the two.
I think we go back to the discussion that we are right now in the
I think it goes back to the idea of how designer, of the way of setting up rules and then the outcome, then the outcome can vary and produce different kinds of design. So this is a discussion of what creating these things around now is a perspective, it's a tool for you to have production for different scenarios and ideas. So this is a discussion of what creating these things around now is a perspective, it's a tool for you to have production for different scenarios and ideas. So this is a discussion of what creating these things around now is a perspective, it's a tool for you to have production for different scenarios and ideas. So this is a discussion of what creating these things around now is a perspective, it's a tool for you to have production for different scenarios and ideas. So this is a discussion of what creating these things around now is a perspective, it's a tool for you to have production for different scenarios and ideas. So this is a discussion of what creating these things around now is a perspective, it's a tool for you to have production for different scenarios and ideas. So this is a discussion of what creating these things around now is a perspective, it's a tool for you to have production for different scenarios and ideas. So this is a discussion of what creating these things around now is a perspective, it's a tool for you to have production for different scenar
I'm sorry, hang on.
Can you talk a little bit more about the figure of the Hagia Sophia or of the monument, which is something I'm not sure that we can get the exchange and then get that one?
Well, that is just an image, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, as such, you can interpret in basically as we like. But I just tell you what I found in it, okay? Why it for me was kind of inspiring. Because they're really... I have to go out of biographies because otherwise it doesn't make sense, because this is not a scholar thing. It's an image that can create some suggestion or not, depends. So basically, I was in this conference in which all these astronauts were explaining the fact that when they are in zero gravity, okay, for example, in this space, that we perceive in a certain way, and for us, that corner under that beam, or between the beam and the pilaster, doesn't make any sense from our normal use of the space, no perception of the space. Instead, for them, it's very important because they go there, they put a field there, then they go in another place. So all the space, you know, they use all the space because in zero gravity they use all the space. So when I look at this, also I don't remember if a pigeon was cut inside, or I thought it was a pigeon inside. But anyway, I imagined that the bird was clearly experiencing this thing in a completely different way that we do. We are sitting there, back there, and just looking at it, and we are in no way to experience the complexity of the space, right? Then I saw the matrix on the other side, the scaffolding. The scaffolding is physical, but in some way it is also, you can interpret it as information that can be stored in space and can be accurated from space, right? So that is the idea that the space can be full of information.
freely. And you can use and activate those information in many different ways. For example, the simplest things are relating to the use of RFDI technology, that are basically those little elements that are can be placed everywhere in the space, right? And then basically either with a cellular or with other, like a palm or other things, you can ask to any particular part of it of the space type of information that you'd like to have. You can generate type of appearance like that, but basically you can have many of those elements in any particular niche or space of one architecture and ask a story that is related to that particular capital, or that particular piece of mosaic, or that particular window, that particular material, right? Because all the space can contain information through that technology. It can be activated. But that is a very simple and most superficial level. All the others can involve, for example, your engagement in the space in similar way that we've seen in those two installations, like an hour and hour, physical, you know, and many other things. But anyway, the idea of the space as something that is there, you know, it is real, and it's something static that can be experienced only with the three dimensions of our body, which is already, you know, a very big emotion anyway. And the idea that that space through information, think is real information, can be activated in other processes through that matrix. That is what this image can generate other thinking, or can generate nothing. It really depends, you know. I mean, for me, it was useful. I don't know if this was the kind of answer you wanted, or if activated anything good or bad for you.
Many of these things have been written in a book that for now is in Italian, which is this one, but I hope that will be soon available in English, I hope, but for now it's in Italian. But certain issues concerning space, particularly the central issues of space, are here, and this paper that is in English, in a decent English. So, it's online, yes. I show it how to go. So this is a chapter of the book. You go from here. Okay? So it's possible to read, and that is the central part of the topic. Has been published in this case. It's only one chapter of the book, but it's one of the most central. So if you want to go back to this issue in the writing form, you can do it.
No, it was always information. Absolutely. I was forced to think that because the processes that we have today will incredibly enlarge that potential of the space to be information, but all the space is information anyway. That today, with our processes to act to that level, it is incredibly high, but all the space is information, for sure.
I think, I mean, what you can see, especially with the technology that we have now, is the value of information that is transferable.
Yeah.
So it's the value that is having, let's say, information that is related to a particular technology, that same information can be then used to another technology,
yeah.
So the value is exactly that, so the capability of using information in different scenarios.
Yes.
But information is still the same, but it is translated and transformed according to the technology. So, for instance, that very big data mind, to think about digital fabrication, starting from an output problem. So, how is the information that can be translated into dimensional 3D, the 3D model, and then into a CAD information, and then can output the final product. So, the value is exactly that. So, it's the other information can be used and transformed. And to in a way create a plan from information that is used in different tools because they are not tools. So I think the value that information that we have now is exactly that for me. So it's the question of how information can be transferred or whether it can find a be submitted in different
tools. Yes. Now these are very interesting concepts.
Your idea of invisible space, I've never really looked at it, but the idea of these sensors which kind of define the space and trying to make it invisible, and we're showing hands and using our artifacts to actually come in contact with the space and modify it to create images and sounds. It seems kind of opposite to the idea of space being invisible with our hands being modifiers that create the outcome, and your pavilion where the movement of the person is within space creating a different effect, but it is the person effect that is modifying the space. How does that fit in with invisible space, I guess?
Well, first, the definition of the invisible space is actually an expression of Marcos Novak, which is kind of the name, I think, of that installation. So it's as an expression, as a thinking, it's kind of secondary within this whole concept. What really we are interested in is the informational aspect of space. This is really what I'm interested in. The idea that, as we said, with information we can experience the space, we can manipulate the space, and we can create a new generation of space and go back. Okay. So that is the topic. So at this point, we can call Mickey Mouse space or invisible space. That doesn't make any, it's not very important. Once we get the central idea, it's the idea that through technology we can achieve another level of understanding of space and possibility of space, etc. Then maybe invisible, that really secondary, we can call it as we want.
Thank you
very much. I really appreciate very nice atmosphere, and thank you all. I enjoyed it very much. Thank you.